9:30 past 6 o'clock. Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, I must admit that when the producers of this program came to me with this topic, there's too much parking in America, I said, what? It's counterintuitive, to say the least. But our guest this morning says that we've literally paved paradise and put up a parking lot, as Joni Mitchell would have sung. And we have too much parking, and it's causing all sorts of problems, and we need to do something about it. So listen on. Even if you're somebody who says, hey, every time I go someplace, there's no place to park. But if you really take a look at it, there's a lot of parking lots out there. They're all covered with blacktop or concrete or something. And that has an effect on things like urban sprawl and the environment and all sorts of other things. Well, that's what we're going to talk about this hour. And you can join our conversation. Here's how that works. You can call us at 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, we'd like you to use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. Joining us by phone this morning from West Lafayette, Indiana, Brian Pijanowski, Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University, whose research about parking is the reason for this show. Good morning, Professor Pijanowski. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, John. Happy to be here.
Now, what prompted you to start looking into how much parking there is in the United States?
Well, one of the projects we have at Purdue here is focusing on sustainable land use systems. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, look at some of the causes of urban sprawl, in particular urban sprawl across Indiana and the Great Lakes Basin. So what we did is we began some spatial analysis, kind of looking at the various forms of urban sprawl, and began to zero in on parking lots because they were very, very large in our database. And we conducted a pilot study in Tippecanoe County here, which is right here in West Lafayette, and found that we had like over 1,000 football fields worth of parking lots in the county. So we began to sit down and ask the question, well, you know, how many spaces that does that translate into? And it took us some time to actually calculate that, and we estimated that we had 355,000 parking spaces in the county. And after thinking about it some more, I thought, well, we've got about 120,000 people in the county, and we probably have fewer drivers, so we went and acquired some additional data and came up with some statistics that were kind of surprising. So, you know, in general, we find that at least in our county, we have about 3 spaces per driver, and we have 11 per family. So that translates into a lot of space.
Well, they aren't all in one place. I'm assuming that a lot of these spaces are taken up by big box retailers, shopping malls, grocery stores, schools,
right.
Universities,
right.
And so forth.
That's correct. So, you know, one of the things that we also did is we tried to calculate this in terms of different kinds of what we call footprints. So we looked at the big box footprint, the mega church footprint, our educational footprint. And we're finding that a lot of, especially the new development, are constructing large-size buildings with megalots that go along with them. So we're kind of looking at that and trying to look at also the environmental costs of that and the economic costs of that as well.
What are the environmental costs of parking lots?
Well, there are several. We've done a study. We looked at, for example, runoff, the increased amount of runoff that would occur as a result of, pavement, impervious surface. We're also conducting a study looking at the heat island effect, contribution to, you know, small-scale climate effects. There have been numerous studies that have documented the increased concentration of contaminants, hydrocarbons, lead, that eventually, you know, contributes towards contamination around the lot. There's really no value to wildlife of parking lots that I know of. And we have trade-offs, too. I mean, we could put a park there, or we can put a parking lot. So explain. There are numerous kind of environmental costs.
Explain the heat island effect.
Well, the heat island effect is really getting into some of the physics of radiative transfer and a lot of different things that relate to the interaction of land surfaces and climate. But basically, what it says is that increasing the impervious surface, increasing the amount of concrete, you're going to have an increase in heat that kind of radiates back into the atmosphere. So it's going to increase temperature.
Okay.
Among other things.
Well, that's kind of what I thought it was, but I just wanted to make sure we got that explanation out there. We're at weather time. We'll check and see what the heat is going to be like or lack thereof around the state. And then we'll be back and talk some more with our guest and hopefully with some callers who will join us. Do you think there's too much parking? Not enough? What is it like in your community? Think about how many parking spaces you're aware of. Or maybe where you live, there isn't enough, according to what you've observed. But either way, give us a call and talk to us about it. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. And if you're in Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. My guest this hour is Brian Pijanowski, Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University, and he's one of the authors of a new study that says we've got too much parking, and it's causing us some problems. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 6 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, the 3rd of October, 2007. John Munson in for Joy Cardine today and the rest of the week as well. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. Did you know that after a 1971 study found that 44% of people entering Washington, D.C. jails were heroin users, President Nixon agreed to fund methadone clinics? After 10, Kathleen Dunn's guest reveals a collection of little-known facts about U.S. presidents. That's after 10 this morning coming up on the Ideas Network. This hour we're talking about parking, and our guest says there's too much of it. We've built a lot of parking lots, and they're causing problems for the environment, and there are other negative effects as well. My guest this hour is Brian Pijanowski, Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University, and is joining us by phone from West Lafayette, Indiana. Now, your study so far, you've looked at Tippecanoe County.
That's right.
In Indiana. How does this extrapolate out to the rest of the country, do you think?
You know, that's an excellent question, and it's one that we're working hard on at the moment. So we've collected the aerial photos for all of Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and doing an analysis across the entire Great Lakes Basin. We're also interested in that kind of question. You know, what is the variability? What are some of the spatial patterns? What are the trends? Let me also say that I've been contacted by a lot of planning organizations across the country saying that they are struggling with this issue on a daily basis. There appears to be some maybe creative solutions, but probably not, a one-time fix. It's something that planning in general is trying to address, and so we're really working hard on it.
We've got some callers waiting to join us, and so let's go to the phones. And first, we'll talk to Cindy in Green Bay. Good morning, Cindy. Thanks for calling.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My comment or my question is: with the number of parking spaces that are available, many people, when they're driving, they think, or when they're going someplace, oh, there's going to be a parking spot available. Mm-hmm. I'm going to drive there,
yeah,
rather than possibly using alternative resources such as city transport or carpooling,
right,
biking, walking, and so forth. I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Well, there have been a lot of comments about, what could we do, and that's probably the most common one. The American lifestyle, we're heavily reliant on the automobile. We're in an auto-centric kind of country, and many of the bloggers around the world, those that have caught up on the story in Europe and Australia, have recognized that is kind of really part of our lifestyle. So, yes, I agree with it. Probably one of the solutions here is to try to change our lifestyle. Think about how we could maybe take public transportation. But there might be some other solutions as well.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. Let's go next to Boyd in Milwaukee. Boyd, good morning.
Good morning, John, and hello to your guest. My question basically is, how would you compare with what is going on in Indiana and various parts of the United States to that of Canada? The reason I ask that is, I don't know if you're familiar with the late Jane Jacobs, but she had a book called The Death and Life of American Cities, and I don't know if she addressed the whole thing of parking, but she certainly addressed the whole thing of differences between Canadian cities in terms of urban planning with American.
No, I haven't read the book, but I'm familiar with some of the general comments that you're making. You know, in Europe, for example, you know, when I travel there and I travel other places in the world, you know, I find that, you know, I don't have to rent a car. I can walk. I can use public transportation. It's fairly user-friendly. It's very user-friendly. Matter of fact, it's kind of fun. We come here to the United States. I can't, you know, if we were to ask everyone in the United States to give up the use of a car for one day, I don't think we could do it. It would be virtually impossible, right? We couldn't shop. We couldn't go to school. We couldn't do anything. It would truly cripple us. So I think that there needs to be some creative solutions here long term, and this is just putting a spotlight on something that hasn't been really talked about much, and I think that. You know, I think it's going to take a while to kind of address it, but
If I can just follow up here in Milwaukee, you hit the nail right on the head. The Milwaukee County, who handles the public transport here, it's to the point where now there's so much lack of funds within the budget that they're thinking of either cutting more bus lines and even the freeway flyer system, which a lot of people take from the outer suburbs to get to work. That's possibly going to be cut, and if not that, it could be our parks could end up falling by the wayside. So yeah, it's pretty dire here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and you know, I'm a little bit familiar somewhat with what's happening in Michigan as well, but with the economic situation there, you know, one of the things that we have to realize that there is a cost to parking, even when it's free to us. You know, as we kind of drive someplace and we visit one of these big box stores, I mean, we're paying for it indirectly. There are maintenance costs, there are costs of lighting, there are costs of resurfacing. In some cases, they're so large, these parking lots are so large, we have to have retention ponds. So that, you know, they have to buy the land to actually have that retention pond. So there are costs to us indirectly. So there are some economics on the other side that we have to address.
Boyd, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Is there some formula that that the builders of these stores and schools and churches and so forth use to compute the number of spaces they have to have for so many square footage of store?
Yes, and you know, that varies from community to community, but you know, generally it is kind of a calculation of the square footage of the building and how that translates into the number of parking spaces. So, you know, I think the number here in Tippecanoe County is something like for every 200 square feet, there's supposed to be one space. So if you have a very, very large building, that translates into you know, many, many parking spaces. You know, one of the other things that I've been thinking about here, you know, it kind of makes you consider all the various aspects of our lifestyle. But, you know, a lot of these buildings, these mega buildings, the big box retailers, for example, they've kind of emerged because they offer many choices. You know, so just think about what I call the toothpaste aisle. You know, 20 years ago, you could walk into a store and the shelf was maybe 2 or 3 feet of toothpaste choices. Now I have a whole aisle on both sides. That actually translates into larger footprints of the building, which also translates into larger spaces.
Let's go next to Diane in Madison. Diane, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that I truly agree with your guest. When I was a young girl and there weren't so many cars on the road and cars didn't go so fast, I remember being able to hear and see frogs and other types of critters, crickets and grasshoppers and garter snakes, and now you don't see anything except cars and pollution and noise and dust. And when I want to go for a nice walk, it's very hard because getting across the street is dangerous, and I certainly don't want to become roadkill around the area where I live. It's just horrible, and it's getting worse instead of better. And that's why I have to walk or take public transportation. And I'll hang
Diane, thanks for the call.
Yeah, you know, actually, I'd like to follow up on that. She's making some good comments there. You know, we've been talking about the various costs here, the economic and the environmental, but I think there's also some social costs here. You know, as we continue to pave over America, what I worry about is that we become as a society disconnected with nature. I worry that we would spend 100% of our time with concrete under our feet when we're outside. And I don't think that's good. I don't think that's healthy for society. So, you know, there's also aesthetic considerations here. I can't say I've ever seen a nice-looking parking lot. Maybe somebody has engineered someone, something, someplace. But there's no really good aesthetic value to them. You know, some urban settings actually have some nice architecture, some nice pleasing or aesthetic value to them, but I've never seen a beautiful parking lot. So there are social costs here, and I think we should consider those as well.
Well, I know that there's at least one parking garage in Madison that's referred to as the Garage Mahal, but I don't know if that's because it's beautiful or what. But some of the problem seems to be, though, that the parking is in the wrong place. For example, in college towns, you tend to get old residential houses divided up into fourplexes, and all of a sudden a street that was intended for, you know, a dozen cars has twice that many or even three times that many trying to compete for spaces. Isn't part of the problem that some of our parking is in the wrong place, or some of the uses that property is being put to may be not appropriate for the parking available?
You know, that's absolutely true. And, you know, in some cases I've gotten some calls from people in, you know, on the coast especially, where, you know, land is at a premium. And so actually lots are probably, and this is going to be part of our study, lots are probably smaller there because the land value is higher. So, there are truly some economic costs there and ramifications. Yes, I think you're absolutely right. You know, in downtown areas, around places where you have a high concentration of people that need to kind of come in, commute to, there's going to be kind of a shortage of parking, or maybe the parking is more close to a one-on-one. But, you know, again, as we kind of consider the footprint of just where do we put our cars, what does that footprint space kind of look like? One of the things that we did not calculate and include in our calculation was actually a space along residential streets. Many of our streets are actually designed so that we can actually put a car there overnight, of course. That's another part of the footprint. And, you know, another part of the footprint is maybe the driveway and then the garage. Garages are expanding. We used to have in the 30s and 40s, you know, a one-car garage, and now they're getting up to three, four, and, you know, occasionally you see a five-car garage.
Well, we're at news time, so we'll pick that thought up when we come back after this news break. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 6:36. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. This hour we're talking about parking and a new study that suggests that there's too much of it and there are problems and costs associated with that that we're not considering. My guest by telephone from West Lafayette, Indiana, is Brian Pijanowski, Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University. Let me give you the phone numbers again. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, that's a toll-free number. And in Madison, you should use 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, Professor Pijanowski, before we interrupted you for the news, we were talking about some parking issues that we don't necessarily think of all the time. But in cities, you don't just it's not just the shopping malls and the large churches and big box retailers and large institutions that that have parking. But people park on the street. They have driveways, garages, and some of these are getting rather large.
That's right. So, you know, what we're trying to do is just really assess what is the footprint of the automobile in the United States. So, you know, is it really contributing to sprawl, and what are the patterns? And so, you know, we've started with parking spaces, but we're also looking at some you know, other sources or other contributions to that footprint, and we think there are many. And there have been other colleagues of mine that have suggested the same, that we should be looking at some other things. And so the footprint is probably fairly large, and I'm sure many of the listeners out there can relate to this.
What about the differences between rural and urban landscapes?
Well, that's a really important aspect of the study that we're conducting. We're finding, for example, that a lot of the new developments along the rural-urban fringe are very, very large. They have the big footprints and then the mega lots that go along with them. You know, a lot of our schools are being built to accommodate large pressures in growth and enrollment. Those large school footprints translate into larger footprints of lots. We have increased activity for school events, sporting events especially. So many people are saying, you know, the only time we have a problem with parking is when we have too little of it, and so they maybe even overcompensate for it. So, you know, I worry that our trend is not one that is sustainable, that is not environmentally friendly, and has some economic cost to them that we're not really looking at carefully.
Isn't part of the problem that the parking lots are built for what's called peak demand load? Like you build your electrical grid you don't build it for the average load. You build it, okay, what's the most that anybody that we can be using at any one time? And then let's add a number to that so that people always have enough electricity. Well, isn't that the same kind of theory behind building parking lots? For example, most shopping malls on an average day, the lot isn't even a third full, but at Christmas time, good luck finding a place to park.
Absolutely. No, you're making a very good point. Many of these lots are kind of looking at peak demand. It's only one day a year. You know, it's the day after Thanksgiving, which is the biggest shopping day in the United States. Or maybe it's the biggest religious event of the year. So what we're doing is we're designing it for that one day. And then the rest of the time, the other 364 days out of the year, it's being underutilized. And in many cases, and I'm sure many of your listeners kind of have observed this too, you drive into a parking lot, and it's a very large lot. It takes you a while to even get from the entrance all the way to, you know, the best parking spot. So there's a lot of space there. And I think we should be using it much more efficiently.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number you can use to join our discussion. 263-1890 is the number to use in Madison, 263-1890. You can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. So maybe you're out there this morning, you're driving into work, and you're thinking you're entering the parking lottery. Maybe where you work, there's enough congestion that parking is a real challenge, and you're listening to this going, what in the world are these guys talking about? On the other hand, maybe you work in one of those areas around the fringe of the cities where there's lots of pavement and plenty of places to park. We can look at these things statistically and we can say, okay, there's too many places to park and this much pavement costs us this and so forth. But I'll tell you what, when you're in, say, northern Wisconsin and it's 35 below zero and the wind is blowing about 25 miles an hour, you want to park wherever you're going as close to the door as you can get.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I probably want to do the same thing when it's that cold. You know, there's kind of, we have to think about all the different trade-offs here. But also, there tends to be this behavior that I would almost consider a little bit extreme or excessive, to think that we have a constitutional right to be able to park next to the door or close to wherever it is we're going. You know, if we have to walk a little bit, then we get a little bit frustrated by that. So if the reverse were true, if we had a nice sunny day, I wouldn't mind having to walk a little bit or take public transportation to get to where I need to go.
Well, I've started trying to park a little farther away from my office than I had traditionally done on my doctor's advice. it isn't helping too much so far. Let's take a call. We've got Christy from La Crosse waiting to talk to us. Christy, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Christy.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I have to say that I totally agree with your guest today that this cementing of our earth is a tremendous concern to me. And I guess I wanted to get his perspective on one thing that we should move toward, because we're having this whole parking issue problem in La Crosse at this time. And one thing that they're looking at doing is replacing the surface parking with vertical parking, with parking ramps.
Right.
Because then, yes, your footprint is still there, but it's like putting people in apartments versus, you know, sprawling. And I wondered if that was a reasonable look at how to use that footprint you already have for the surface parking.
Right.
And second of all, do trees in parking lots, for instance, well, many of our parking lots, our surface parking lots, have trees all over them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they help. And I also know that on the top of this proposed parking lot, they were going to put green space.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if those all make a difference, and I will take your comments off the air.
You know, I mean, all of those, I think, are great suggestions and potential solutions. I do not know of any studies that have looked at, for example, the implications of scattering trees, for example, within a parking lot. You know, I'm sure someone who's much better at maybe tree physiology and water take-up and that sort of thing could probably speak better to that. But those are the sorts of solutions or ideas that I'm encouraging. The garage, I think, is another solution where we're basically reallocating the footprint. But then green technologies, I think, is something that we should really look at. And I know that there are a lot of communities around the country that are looking at green technologies, looking at impervious kinds of surfaces so that we don't have as much runoff. You know, the runoff, I kind of pointed out as one particular problem, but, you know, it's kind of a multiple kind of problem as well, because the runoff also increases the flashiness of our streams. So we have an increase in risk to floods, for example, as we continue to pave over our surface. It also increases the temperature of our streams. And in some places like Wisconsin, where we have a lot of cold water streams that help support especially some great fisheries, those are being altered. So, I mean, the consequences as you begin to think about this are many. So looking at and exploring some of the solutions that the caller kind of identified, I think are really good. But we really need to, unfortunately, really study it a little bit better, because I really don't know some of the answers to those questions.
We're at weather time, so we'll take a break. And when we come back, we've got some more callers who want to join us. But there's still a line available for you if you want to call in right now, 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, toll-free. In Madison, please use 263-1890, 263-1890. What do you think we ought to do? If the problem is we have too much parking, what are some options? What are some proposals, some things you'd like to see done perhaps to solve this problem? Or maybe you don't think it's a problem. Maybe you disagree with what we're talking about here this morning, and we'd like you to call in and express yourself on that as well. And you can do that right after we take this break. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:47 on this Wednesday morning. Here's what's coming up a little bit later today on the Ideas Network. After 3 on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders, Jean Faraca and her guest explore a little-known but true story from World War II about two Christian zookeepers in Poland who risked their lives to save more than 300 Jews by hiding them at their zoo. That's after 3 o'clock today on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about parking. Our guest says there's too much of it. We've got more parking spaces than we have drivers, and this is causing a whole bunch of problems, and it will only get worse as we go on. Joining us by phone from West Lafayette, Indiana, is Professor Brian Pijanowski, Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University. We've got someone waiting to join the discussion, so let's go back to the phones and talk to Lucas in Kenosha. Lucas, good morning.
Good morning, Lucas.
Lucas, are you still there? Well, I think we lost Lucas. Let me give the phone numbers again, and maybe Lucas can call back and we can reconnect him. 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number, 263-1890, if you're joining us from Madison. The as I was preparing for this program and doing some reading, I ran across some information from Donald Shoup, a professor of urban planning at UCLA, and I'm sure you're familiar with his work.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
One of the things that there's always kind of a trade-off, and the things are never all one way or the other. And one of the things that he discovered was that if you don't have enough parking, you waste gas and time driving around looking for a parking space. And, of course, any time that internal combustion engine is turned on, we're putting CO2 into the atmosphere, not to mention other things. So there's how do you achieve a balance between what's needed and what's not needed?
Well, Don's work is great, he's looking at another dimension of it that we haven't. And so, you know, there are costs. I think he calculated the total number of hours that the community is spending just trying to find a parking space. And then he translates that, into things like the amount of fuel being used. Part of what we're trying to do here in the sustainable land use kind of research program that we have at Purdue is kind of, you know, how do we achieve these balances that you're talking about? There are certain trade-offs. There are environmental trade-offs. There are economic trade-offs. There are social trade-offs. For us to kind of move into a more sustainable lifestyle, we need to kind of look for these sorts of solutions. And so what we're trying to do is just look at really the magnitude of the problem, first of all, and then begin a dialogue with a lot of people. And this has been really, really helpful for me just to kind of get some feedback from people all over the country that are really concerned about this. I rarely get someone who really calls up and says, you know, you're really, really off. I think most people are saying, yes, this is a problem in our community. Let's try to solve it.
Let's take a call from Maggie in Madison. Maggie, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I live not too far from UW Hospital in Madison,
yep.
And I think it's ironic that they've been talking about building newer, larger parking structures to hold the capacity,
right.
Especially with the employee parking.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the budget for Madison Metro Transit, the bus system, has been cut and the rates have been increased.
Right.
It's just counterintuitive. If you want more people to ride the buses so you don't have to build new parking structures, then make the bus rides cheaper and have it go to more places.
I agree. And earlier I talked about some of the hidden costs of what we call free parking. So, you know, many of us just, you know, drive to some place like a big box retailer, but those costs are eventually passed on to us. So there are these hidden costs. So we really need to explore that. So when we do consider these kind of decisions with public transportation, we really need to look at all the different dimensions and look at the hidden costs And I think the caller has identified a really key one.
Thanks, Maggie. Let's go next to Mike in Duluth. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Pretty good so far. Found a place to park.
That's good. Me too.
Good.
Reason I called, I didn't hear the whole program, so this may have come up, but I work for an engineering firm that's involved in both pavement design and materials testing. And the newest thing we've been working with is permeable asphalt and permeable concrete for parking lots.
Absolutely.
You take about a third of the lot in the center, and you run all your water to that. The water goes right through your parking lot and is collected below. And
right.
Prevents that. I didn't know if that had been covered or not, so I wanted to bring it up.
Okay. Well, we did talk about runoff, but we hadn't talked about the new technology in paving materials.
No, we haven't. I mean, I kind of mentioned it in one of my lists of maybe possible solutions, you know, the green technologies, and I think we really need to explore those more often. Those are just overlooked. You know, we're in a trend right now of just, you know, just paving and just making things fairly large. The megalots are getting larger and larger. So yes, I think that these are probably some of the solutions that we need to consider. I'm not sure that we're considering them enough or as frequently as we need to. Those are out there, and we need to explore them more so than we would be doing.
Mike, anything else for us this morning?
I totally agree. I have one other little small point to bring up. It happened the other day. I had a small project that was refinishing a piece of wood, and I needed a number of different grit sandpaper. I went and bought them, and somebody else suggested I would have saved a bunch of money at a big box store. I went to a local hardware store. Mm-hmm. Well, I calculated that the drive to the big box store would have been twice as far. You got the big parking lot, the long walk, plus I get in the big box store, and for each size, I'd had to buy 5 sheets. And where I went, a little local hardware store, I bought 1 sheet of each size that I needed, and it cost me about a third of what it would have cost at the big box store. And I would have ended up with a whole bunch more sandpaper that I didn't need.
Right.
And, whenever possible, let's support some of our local merchants, and we don't have the parking problem. We can usually park within 3 stalls of the door, and there's somebody that says, what do you need? And then we'll go get it for you, help you find it, you know?
So you save time as well.
To boot.
There you go.
Yeah.
So with that, I'll leave you. Go back to listening on the radio.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. One of the solutions, and you, I think you touched on this earlier, but I want to bring this up again. There are regulations that require certain types of structures to have, you know, X amount of parking per square foot of space.
Right.
How do we get city planners and people in the counties and townships to kind of change their minds on what is really necessary in some of these cases?
Well, I mean, I'm seeing a trend where we're beginning to consider that. I mean, there, like I said earlier, there have been lots of planning organizations across the country that have contacted me and said, we've struggled with this issue too, and we're trying to address this through various mechanisms. One is just, you know, how do you recalculate, space, footprint space of a building and translate that into parking spaces? Some of these big box retailers, I'm not sure they need this, the amount of space that they have. I mean, it would be nice to be able to work more closely with them and local planning to kind of come up with maybe more efficient strategies. But that's just one of multiple solutions that we've talked about already. You know, some of them, like the previous caller and some earlier callers, talked about behavioral change. We do have this expectation that that wherever we're going to go, we're going to find a parking space and hopefully find it close to the door and kind of zip in and zip out. But maybe we should just readjust those expectations just a little bit and, you know, save a little bit of our landscape.
Well, I'm trying to do my best to help out. I do a lot of shopping online, and then my merchandise is just delivered to me. But that doesn't help my downtown store either. Where are you going next with this study? We've only got about a minute left in the program, and I want to give you a chance to kind of wrap things up here. What's the next step?
Well, the next step is to really look at this across the country, and we're moving from Tippecanoe County out across the state of Indiana, and then doing the study in Michigan and Wisconsin, and have some plans to do Illinois as well. So the idea here is to look at the entire footprint in the Great Lakes Basin, and then potentially the environmental, economic kind of costs associated with parking surface. So it's a study that's going to take us some time. I'm also intrigued by a lot of the suggestions that I've heard from various callers and from various organizations across the country about behavioral change, about planning options, and so I'm going to continue to explore that and continue the dialogue on those issues.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Another interesting hour here on the Ideas Network.
Thanks, John.
Brian Pijanowski is Associate Professor of Forestry and Natural Resources at Purdue University. He joined us by phone from West Lafayette, Indiana, and I hope he had a place to park when he got to work today. This program was produced by Leo Duran with on-air production by Karen Prager. If you'd like a copy of this program, it's the radio store for you, 800-747-7444. It's program 10-3A, as in Apple.